The successful appeal of a lawsuit vindicates Cirrus Design. Airbus is backing a promising electric aircraft. And NASA awards 4 new private spaceflight development contracts. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Wednesday, April 20th, 2011. An appeals court in Minnesota has overturned a ruling against Cirrus Design, which held the company responsible in the deaths of 2 people fatally injured in a 2003 accident involving an SR-22. Gary Prokop and James Kosak were fatally injured after Prokop flew into instrument conditions for which he was not rated. Court documents indicate that prior to purchasing the Cirrus, Prokop had logged 225 hours, mostly in his personal Cessna 172. He was in the process of obtaining an instrument rating. NTSB found that the probable cause of the accident was spatial disorientation experienced by the pilot due to a lack of visual references and a failure to maintain altitude. Contributing factors were the pilot's improper decision to attempt flight into marginal VFR conditions, his inadvertent flight into instrument meteorological conditions, the low lighting condition, and the trees. The lawsuit said Cirrus was negligent because Prokop had not been properly trained in how to engage the autopilot, which could have helped him fly out of the marginal conditions. The jury agreed and awarded $16.4 million to the families of the 2 men. Minnesota Public Radio reports that the appeals court found Cirrus had fulfilled its legal responsibility to warn owners about the risks involved in flying and that instructions in the pilot's operating handbook covering autopilot use were sufficient. In the ruling released yesterday, the court found, quote, although proficiency training undoubtedly promoted the safe use of the SR-22, we find no support in the law for the proposition that Cirrus's duty to warn included an obligation to train Prokop to proficiently pilot the SR-22. Because an airplane manufacturer's duty to warn of dangers associated with the use of its aircraft does not include a duty to provide pilot training, respondents' negligence claims cannot be sustained under a product liability theory. Moreover, because the claims sound in educational malpractice, they are barred as a matter of law, unquote. NPR also reports one justice disagreed with the majority, saying that Cirrus had voluntarily assumed a duty to provide the promised training, unquote. The just-concluded Aero Friedrichshafen 2011 industry event in Germany provided an opportunity for attendees to get a look at a plane called the E-Genius. It's an electrically powered aircraft with side-by-side seating for 2, a max takeoff weight of 1,870 pounds, and it claims a range of 250 miles at cruise speeds of up to 145 miles per hour. The engine is rated at 60 kilowatts, or about 80 horsepower, and the wingspan is 55 feet. The E-Genius was developed by the Institute of Aircraft Design at the University of Stuttgart in Germany as a testbed for further evaluation of the technology. Airbus, which is a high-level sponsor, says the project marks yet another step for its alternative fuels roadmap, which is working toward making such energy sources a reality for aviation use. NASA has awarded 4 Space Act agreements in the second round of the agency's commercial crew development effort. Each company is expected to advance commercial crew space transportation system concepts and mature the design and development of elements of their systems, including launch vehicles and spacecraft. The selectees for CCDEV 2 awards are Blue Origin of Kent, Washington at $22 million, Sierra Nevada Corporation of Louisville, Colorado for $80 million, SpaceX of Hawthorne, California for $75 million, and Boeing in Houston for $92.3 million. Ed Mango, NASA's Commercial Crew Program Manager, stated, quote, the next American-flagged vehicle to carry our astronauts into space is going to be a U.S. commercial provider. The partnerships NASA is forming with industry will support the development of multiple American systems capable of providing future access to low Earth orbit, unquote. Boeing says it has achieved multiple qualifications for its worldwide network of 787 training campuses, using training devices which can now be used with an approved training course in locations around the globe. Boeing operates 787 training campuses in Seattle, Singapore, Tokyo, London Gatwick, and Shanghai. As part of the qualification process, Boeing had to demonstrate that the training devices around the world were similar or identical in the way they operate. Last month, China's Civil Aviation Authority qualified the Shanghai Boeing training campus for 787 training, including the full flight 787 simulator and the 787 flight training device. That makes more than 20 separate qualifications in 5 locations on 3 continents in support of the Dreamliner's entry into service beginning later this year. Up next on ANN, CAP again provides damage assessments in the Dakotas. A new code of conduct for flight instructors is blunt at times. And airports appeal to DHS and DOT for a sanity break. You're listening to Aero News.
Now, another moment of freedom from Cirrus Aircraft. Freedom through safety. Perhaps the ultimate freedom is confidence, assurance, and peace of mind. We design it into every personal aircraft we build. It's the security that comes with knowing you're flying the plane with a parachute. The breakthrough concept that launched the Cirrus phenomenon.
Piperjet.
Pipermatch.
Global expansion.
Meridian, Mirage, Matrix, and more.
With so much happening at Piper, how can I possibly keep up?
Get informed. Get involved at facebook.com/Piper Aircraft.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for April 20th. I'm Paul Plack. Each day at lunchtime here in Utah, I try to get out and walk or jog the trail along the Jordan River, which flows from Utah Lake into the Great Salt Lake. I may have to interrupt that routine over the next few weeks, as statewide mountain snowpacks about 150% of normal, combined with a cool, wet spring, builds to what may be significant flooding if things suddenly warm up. Along the Red River Valley in North Dakota, they're already above flood stage. Aerial photos have shown areas around Fargo submerged for more than a week. Volunteers from Civil Air Patrol's North Dakota Wing are flying daily, using digital photography to help emergency management officials assess damages and deploy assets. Lieutenant Colonel William E. Kay, the wing's interim commander, reports, quote, "We've been flying multiple sorties, 4 or 5 flights a day, for about a week now," unquote. CAP's reconnaissance photos are tagged with date and GPS coordinates. During spring floods a year ago, CAP aircraft and volunteers from 7 wings provided almost 360 hours of flight time and delivered thousands of photos supporting disaster relief efforts in North and South Dakota and Minnesota. The website for the Aviator's Model Code of Conduct now includes a document for flight instructors. The Flight Instructor's Model Code of Conduct, or FIMCC version 1.0, was released this week by the project's permanent editorial board. The code was developed by a team of aviation professionals and draws upon decades of research and experience. The document has been endorsed by some high-profile instructors affiliated with the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, including J.J. Greenway, AOPA Air Safety Institute Director of Safety and Chief Flight Instructor. He says, quote, "I think if you can get this widely distributed into the aviation education community and get CFIs to heed the advice, it would go a long way toward improving the overall flight instruction experience, particularly for primary students who are just starting out and gaining their first impression of general aviation," unquote. The guidelines in the 11-page document range from subtle, such as making sure to use transponders and either file a flight plan or make ground personnel aware of your plans before even local flights, to very frank recommended practices regarding personal hygiene and avoiding sexual relationships with students. You'll find a link to the website where you can download the document yourself at the bottom of the text version of this story, dated April 19th, at aero-news.net. Airports Council International North America, which represents U.S. and Canadian airports that handle 95% of domestic commercial traffic in the region, is telling the Departments of Transportation and Homeland Security enough already. The organization has submitted comments in response to the DHS notice on reducing regulatory burden and retrospective review and the Department of Transportation's regulatory review of existing regulations. The notices stem from President Obama's January executive order that directed all federal agencies to develop and submit a review of existing regulations to determine what outmoded, ineffective, insufficient, or excessively burdensome regulations should be modified or repealed. ACINA has urged both DHS and DOT to establish a transparent regulatory review process with a reasonable schedule so that industry stakeholders can provide input. ACINA President Greg Principato observes, quote, "As airports continue to face difficult financial times, it's critical that safety and security dollars be well spent There are numerous federal proposals that do not enhance safety, but simply increase bureaucracy and raise airport costs. Local officials cannot continue to fund the many unfunded and unjustified mandates issued by federal agencies. This review is long overdue, and we encourage both DHS and DOT to carefully consider our recommendations for regulatory reform, unquote. Specifically, ACINA wants DHS to expedite making global entry a permanent program, eliminate redundant processes for clearing foreign citizens entering the U.S., stop wasting money on 100% screening of airport employees in favor of spot checks and background checks, and include sunset dates on new mandates, forcing their periodic review. It's asking DOT for reviews of safety management system mandates, Part 139 safety enhancements, and so-called proxy rules, which are imposed not by formal regulation, but through advisory circulars and FAA orders. Still ahead, United Space Alliance announces post-shuttle program layoffs. An FBO war in Texas takes a timeout. And will the Mahler Sky Car finally fly? You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Wednesday, April 20th. I'm Paul Plack. The Shadow tactical unmanned aircraft systems developed by AAI have now logged more than 600,000 total flight hours. That's over 70 years of accumulated flight time. About 90% of those hours were flown in support of combat operations in Iraq and Afghanistan. AAI says the key to the success of Shadow is continuous operational readiness, which AAI supports through a comprehensive performance-based logistics program. With NASA's shuttle program winding down, United Space Alliance has announced its reduction in workforce plan. USA currently employs about 5,600 employees in three states. The layoff plan just announced includes as many as 1,950 employees in Florida, up to 800 in Texas, and 30 to 40 in Alabama. CEO Virginia Barnes noted, quote, "The accomplishments of this team are unmatched in human spaceflight. It will be difficult to say goodbye to such tremendously talented and dedicated teammates, and we are committed to making this transition as smooth as possible for them," unquote. That transition will include severance pay and access to support for resume development, job interview training, and career transition training. Barnes added, quote, "Though USA will be a significantly smaller company after the space shuttle program is completed, we are optimistic about our future. USA has a great deal to offer in the way of skills, experience, and expertise, and we're looking forward to providing our unique capabilities to a wide variety of new and existing customers," unquote. A dispute over allegedly tainted avgas at New Braunfels Municipal Airport in Texas has cooled down, at least for now. The city, which operates an FBO on the airport, impounded a fuel truck belonging to competitor New Braunfels Aero and obtained a restraining order shutting down its fuel sales after alleging that the private company improperly mixed and stored fuels. NB Aero co-owner Sam Adams vehemently denied the charges and says the city is trying to force his business off the airport. The San Antonio Express News reports the city had concerns over how NB Aero conducted its business, but that didn't cause the flap over the fuel. Now, the paper reports the two parties have agreed to a settlement, which will allow the FBO to reclaim its fuel truck, but the fuel inside will have to be destroyed. City Attorney Alan Whalen says that before it's disposed of, pilots who purchased some of the suspect fuel from NB Aero will be allowed to draw a sample for independent testing. The restraining order will also be lifted. Adams says his fuel provider will reimburse him for the avgas he's losing as a result of the skirmish, money he says he'll use to buy additional fuel and make some city-mandated repairs to his facility. He still contests that the fuel was tainted in the first place. Some local pilots agree, telling the New Braunfels Herald Zeitung that they feel the city is withholding the results of its fuel testing to avoid having to pay to replace the fuel. Online reviews of NB Aero are almost universally positive, praising the family-owned atmosphere and personal attention to GA pilots. A few also openly allege anti-competitive behavior by the city. And finally today, if there's an award for persistence, inventor Paul Muller might be a candidate. He's been pushing his concept for flying cars for about 40 years, or roughly since the Jetsons TV show was still in production by Hanna-Barbera. The current four-place Muller Skycar prototype has been hyped for a decade and claims a range of 750 miles at a cruise speed of over 300 miles per hour. At least $100 million has been gathered from investors by the company. A few years ago, Muller International was taking deposits, but says that is no longer the case. The prototypes were put up for auction on eBay a while back, but failed to sell. Muller has never been able to demonstrate a prototype in flight, except for a 2003 demonstration in which it was tethered to a crane. But now, the company says it's scheduled a demonstration flight of its M400 Skycar Volantor for October 11th in Vacaville, California. It's described as an invitation-only media event. The vehicle's eight Wankel engines driving ducted fans will reportedly be fueled with ethanol for this test. Paul Muller has yet to prove he can build a practical flying car. But if he succeeds in making it fly, he at least has proven that he knows how to sell. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, in the conclusion of Jim Campbell's interview with Iridium's Brian Pemberton, what will satellite communications be able to do for general aviation in the future? And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our Aerocasts at iPodder, Podcast Alley, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.